Well, good morning. Good morning. My name is Grant. If we haven't had a chance to meet, I'm one of the teaching pastors here. And I just want to encourage you to come to Party on the Hill, even if Brandon insists on calling it POTH. I don't really know what that is. And I have no idea whether a Tesla is going to be there. Okay. That is way above my pay grade. And so just want to encourage you to come and to bring your kids and family and neighbors. It's going to be a fun, fun time. I also want to just give you a little bit of an update and thank you for all of the prayers and for all of the students that went to San Francisco and went to City Impact. They have made it back safely. They had an amazing time there, and talking to the team that went, they said that God just moved in some amazing ways, and they saw students meeting people for the first time that maybe would have made them feel uncomfortable, but they were able to meet with them and share part of their story with them and what God is doing in their life. And they prayed with individuals that were there coming to City Impact for help. And the students had an amazing time. Not only did they do amazing things for the kingdom of God, but they also went a week without their cell phones, and they made it back safely, and they ate some questionable food, and they didn't shower apparently for a little bit while they were there, which is why this is a high school trip, not a junior high trip, right? And so they had a great time, and there's no doubt that God did some just miraculous things to the students. So those of you that went or supported and prayed for those, thank you for the work that they were able to do there. Also, speaking of miracles, congratulations to the Beavers out there, all of you fans, and yay, sports! 18-year-olds, yeah. No, such a fun time, right? It's a great summer. You've got the College World Series happening. You've got the World Cup going on, right? Spoiler alert, Russia went on. They beat Spain this morning in a shootout, in case you missed that. It's just a fun time in the summer. And so we're in the middle of this great time. We're also in the middle of this series on pure wisdom, where we have been just making our way through the Proverbs, looking at this entire book in the Old Testament that is full of wisdom for us. And we're calling it pure wisdom because we all can get wisdom, but what I need is wisdom that is pure. We sort of define wisdom this way. We've said wisdom is doing the right thing at the right time in the right way with the right motives. And it's that last little part, the right motives, that's really important. Because I can look around at the culture around me. I can look at society and see people doing things and go, yeah, that seems to be a wise decision. Oh, look, they did that, and they were working with wisdom there. What I can't do is look at the decision and test the motives behind that decision. That's why I need God's wisdom. Because general wisdom may be doing the right thing at the right time in the right way, but because I don't know your motives, I don't know that you're doing it with the right reasons. And so we need to fear God, right? That's where Joel began a couple of weeks ago as we launched this series, saying wisdom is something that everyone should desire. We should all strive and value to get more wisdom. But I can't do that without first fearing God. That pure wisdom is fearing the Lord and saying, God, I'm going to trust what you have for me more than I do my own logic or anybody else's wisdom around me. So often as a pastor, people will come to me and they'll say, hey, Grant, I've got a life decision to make over marriage or dating or our finances or taking a new job or quitting a job or parenting and all these different things that we're trying to figure out, right? And everybody in some way, shape, or form, they're asking the same question. They're saying, hey, what is God's will for my life? See, I'm absolutely convinced, though, that that might be the wrong question. Rather than simply asking what is God's will, what if we started to ask the question, God, what is your wisdom for my life? Because I believe that his will is built upon his wisdom. And so if we are going to make it through life seeking after God and saying, God, we're going to trust you more than anything, then I need God's wisdom to do that. Marty Miranda, our youth pastor over in Beaverton, did an amazing job last week in looking at the idea of teachability. And what the book of Proverbs, the pure wisdom that God has for us to be teachable. And part of what he concluded was that it takes an act of humility, right? Of humbling ourselves and creating this posture that we say, okay, God, let me be teachable on this. And I believe that it's that sort of a posture that we're going to need this morning for today's topic that we're going to look at in Proverbs. And we're going to see everything that Proverbs has to teach us on this topic. And this topic, it's one of those that we don't really like to talk about. It's one that we have all the information, but we aren't really putting it into practice. It's a topic that can make us feel a little bit uncomfortable. It's a topic that often we don't want to let God speak into at all. today's topic, I would argue that this sermon this morning is maybe the most important sermon in this entire series. Now hear me, I said the topic is the most important. This sermon, that doesn't mean this sermon's the best sermon in the entire series, okay? That's next week. Come back next week for the best sermon in the series. This week, it's just in this massively important topic because it's today's topic that destroys marriages. If we were to just look at the statistics of why people say they divorce, it's the topic today that is the number one reason. It's the topic that we're going to look at and try to glean wisdom from God on today. This is the reason that friendships fall apart and families disintegrate. It's the reason that people go into business and they think we're going to be best friends and partners and this is going to be amazing. And then they get down the road and they hate each other and are enemies. Because today's topic is one of those topics that cuts to the core of who we are, and we all have our opinions and we all love to disagree. And so this morning we're going to look at the topic of politics. Totally kidding, everybody. I'm not going to go there. Not even going to go there. Some of you were just like, you just were like, I can't believe we're going there, right? No. It's so much simpler. It's money. So much simpler today, right? And so we're money. Yeah, we are going to look at the topic of our finances and our resources this morning. And it's one of those topics that we know can just mess with us. And as soon as I say that, some people are like, man, no, really, we're going to talk about money again? No, God, I don't want God to even begin to speak into that area of my life. Some of you, you're maybe a guest with a friend today, and you were like, no, I'm not going to go to church, because every time I go to church, they talk about money. And your friend was like, no, not my church, come. And now you're here, and you're like, see, I told you. They're just, here they go again. And here's the thing, I believe that there's some amazing wisdom from God around our resources. And I believe this is something that we all need to grow in. In fact, Jesus had a lot to say about this topic. He spoke about the idea of our resources more than he did almost anything else. And the reason Jesus did that is because Jesus knows our hearts better than anyone. He is God, after all. Here's what he said in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. He said, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, this was written by a guy named Matthew, who was an eyewitness to what Jesus did. He heard Jesus say this, and he recorded it, and Jesus goes, listen, you can't serve two masters. You're either going to hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. And then, in case we thought maybe he's being ambiguous, Jesus just cuts right to the chase. And he goes, listen, I know the thing that is going to cause you to not serve me more than any other thing out there, and it's your finances. It's money. It's the almighty, all-powerful dollar. That is going to be the thing that so many of us are tempted to let become our God. So that means I've got some areas to grow in wisdom around this. That when I give my life to God, when I say, God, I believe that Jesus Christ is God, but is also man, and that he came and lived a life that I could never have lived. And he took my rebellion and he dealt with it on the cross in his death. But then he rose from the dead, conquering sin and death. And I believe in Jesus, that God looks at me and says, good, you believe in me and you trust me. Now trust me with all of your life. Everything that you do, would you trust me with that? And the call upon every one of us that calls ourselves a Christian would say that, yes, God, I trust you with everything. And so we do this symbolic thing, right, called baptism. If you came to the Rooted celebration, you know that we sat in here and we celebrated what God had done, and then we went outside because it's spring and it's beautiful in Oregon. And so we went out there and we had a baptistry set up filled with warm water because we're Americans and we need to be comfortable, right? And so we filled it up and we dunked people and we said, listen, this is symbolizing being buried with Christ and then rising from the dead to commit your life to him. And it's just an outward sign of what we already know has happened to the person. And it's supposed to be symbolic of what we believe, but if we were honest, in that moment, most of us, as we were getting dunked under the water in this symbol, we would also reach into our back pocket, pull our wallet out, and go, okay, dunk everything else. Right? And we would want to hold this up because we go, no, this so is tempting to be my master, rather than God himself. But here's what Jesus also says in Luke chapter 16. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? You see, I love Luke 16 because what Jesus is saying is, listen, it doesn't matter how much you do have or don't have. I'm not concerned with how wealthy you are or how poor you are. What I'm concerned with is the heart behind it and what you do with those resources. How much are you trusting me with them? Because you can look at the way someone handles their worldly wealth, and that allows me to then trust them with true riches all the more. See, Jesus is concerned with the way that we handle our finances, not so much with how much we have, because money in and of itself is neutral. It is neither good nor evil. It is neutral. It's the way we handle it that changes things, which is why Matthew in chapter 6, verse 21 says, "For where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. See, Jesus keeps coming back to this idea of going, I really care about how you handle it. I don't want you to have any idols in your life. And I know, because this is human history and Jesus has the long look on human history, that money is one of those things that becomes an idol so quickly for us. So I believe that all of us have areas in our life where we can grow in wisdom, pure wisdom, around this topic of finances and resources. And so I want us to look in the book of Proverbs this morning and see what we can glean from it. Now, here's what I know. I know that we're going to look at an overview, and then we're going to look at how we earn our money and spend our money and save our money and give our money. And here's what I absolutely know from the get-go. You are not going to learn anything new today. If you came this morning and you were like, I can't wait for this deep theological insider to open a narrative of scripture and see something that's never been there, have my world illuminated by this pastor, that's a different church on a different, okay, that's just not today. Because today is gonna be straight down the middle, simple and practical. It won't be new for us. Remember, there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. And knowledge, we can have all the information in the world about something, but if we're not applying it and actually putting it into action, then we lack wisdom. And so my hope is that we wouldn't just check out from this morning because it's not new material, but that we would engage it all the more and say, God, would you convict me and show me in this area of my money and finances where I need to grow and allow your pure wisdom to speak into it. And Proverbs chapter 30 begins really with the heart of Jesus that we've already looked at. Proverbs 30 verse 7 says this, two things I ask from you. Do not refuse me before I die. So whoever's writing this, they're saying, God, I'm gonna ask you two things. Two things of you, God, and I'm calling your bluff. Do not refuse these of me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Keep falsehood and lies far from me, and give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. It's a scary prayer to me. God, two things I ask. In all of my life, two things. Make me not double-minded. Help me to not be a double-minded person. Remove falsehood from me. Remove the lies that I have. Remove the areas that I can self-deceive away from me. God, help me to pursue you and you alone, purely, righteously, unadulterated after you. God, I want to pursue you and only you, so remove any falsehood or lies from me. Because I know that this peace around finances can become a God that I lie to myself about, then God, make me neither rich nor poor. But only give me my daily bread, and may I trust you for it. That's a bold prayer that maybe some of us need to begin to ask. And he goes on to say, this is why I neither want to be rich or poor. He says, because otherwise I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? That God, if you make me rich and give me too much, then I'm going to start to look around and go, well, God, I don't really need you. Because when bad things happen in my life, I just simply pull out my credit card and swipe it, or I write a check, or I pay somebody off, and my problems go away. There's really no need for faith in you, God. So God, I don't really need you. Or when we have too much, we begin to look at our bank account and hold on to it tightly, because after all, we look at it and we say things like, see all of this money? I've earned that. and we begin to view it as this God, and we say, see, this is all that I have, and my entire self-worth is in my bottom line and my net worth, and so God, I really don't need you anymore. And the proverb writer is going, we're all tempted to do that when we get too much. He's going, no, no, there's the other side of it. If you're poor, if you're lacking, then what happens is you become poor and you steal, and so you dishonor the name of God. And you go after, you go, I don't have enough, so I need more, and I can always get more. So now I'm going to cut corners and be dishonest and lack integrity in order to get more. Ironically, both of these people are a slave to money, just in very different ways. Well, one is a slave to it because it's their God and they've made it their master and they're trying to hold on to it as much as they can. And the other one, because they don't have it and so they want it more. And so it's something that they covet and they go after and they strive and they do anything they can to get it. And both of these are forms of slavery. But the proverb writer is stepping back for a moment and saying, God, would you just allow me to trust you in the moment? And to quit relying on finances in either side of the spectrum to satisfy. Because we know that it never does. You don't have to look far beyond the sports world to understand that, right? We have all these amazing athletes that are getting paid millions of dollars for what they do, and yet they're always trying to get more and more and more, and it never satisfies. And so many of them get to the end of their careers, and they have nothing to show for it financially because they weren't wise. Because I can always outspend my income. I know that I can. And when you make it, finances your God, then all of a sudden you're going, well, if I could just get more and more and more. And so he's going, no, don't do that. We also know that finances are not going to fix our problems. Because we have people that are maybe over here that one day they come in and they win the lottery, right? Just go Google what happens to lottery winners, statistically speaking. And how they lose their family and their friends and their businesses and everything falls down around them because they quickly learn that although they had little and they wanted more, once they got more, they learned what we all know, more money, more problems, right? This is what we see. And so the proverb writer is saying, God, would you just allow me, give me a heart that trusts you in the moment? Because you see, again, our finances in and of themselves are neutral. It's the heart behind it. God, would I just trust you above everything? So Proverbs begins there. I think we have to understand that. It's the entire book. It really drives to that premise. But I also know that we have resources. And we've all been given them and we all receive them. And so it begs questions like, okay, great, but I have them. So what do I do with them? And the first thing I think we need to understand on this realm this morning is that we need to earn our money with integrity. That as you are earning money, as you work, and as you are gaining resources, are you doing it with integrity? Proverbs 28, verse 20. A faithful person will be richly blessed, but one eager to get rich will not go unpunished. So listen, a faithful person, someone that is working with integrity, that person will be richly blessed. But when eager to get rich, oh, they're going to eventually end up getting punished. Maybe a more modern way to say that would be, hey, the get-rich-quick scheme, it just doesn't work. Maybe in the short term, right? And you could point to people and go, well, it worked for them. Yeah, remember, these are proverbs, not promises. And so there's outliers to any of these, but for the most part, as we look at wisdom as a whole, we go, yeah, if you're going for the get-rich-quick scheme, trying to get as much money as fast as you can by any means possible, it's not going to pay off in the long run. You need to earn with integrity. I remember a goofy time in my life when I learned this principle. It was in college, and some of my friends around the college campus, one of those pyramid schemes started making its way through the student body. Right? It was some like electricity thing, and if you can get in earlier, then you're going to make more money as you get all of your other friends to sign up for it. And, da, da, da. And I was like, yes. And all of my friends were doing it, and we're all thinking like, this is how we're going to pay off our student loans. This is going to be amazing. But knowing my dad is a wise businessman, I called him, and I was like, Dad, I got to tell you about this thing. And I laid out the whole plan for him, and he was like, Grant, it's not going to work. I've seen pyramid schemes before. Yeah, it works quickly in the beginning, but eventually you're going to get into trouble and you're going to have to go back on your word and you're going to have to get out, and it's always harder to get out. The get-rich-quick thing doesn't work. And I was like, no, Dad, you don't understand. And he did, but I kept trying to explain it to him anyway, right? And thankfully in that moment, I was able to be teachable and go, okay, Dad, I'm going to trust you on this. And sure enough, it didn't pan out. And the friends of mine that got into it, they wished that they never had. because they weren't willing to earn with integrity. But that's just a pyramid scheme. You go, okay, great, I've learned how to avoid those. But then I would say, oh, okay, well then what about other areas of your life right now? Other business ventures that you are in? Are you cutting corners and able to get in order to get your product to market faster? Are you delivering to the public something that you know is inferior and isn't good, but well, you can just hide it and bury it and get the lawyers on it later and handle it in that way? Are you over-promising and under-delivering? Are you lying to people about the thing that you have and then you realize that you're lying and so you just kind of market it in a different way and you glamorize it and glitter it up and you call it, this is our marketing scheme. You see, in the world around us, they're not really as concerned with gaining money with integrity. They're concerned with, well, how do I get it as fast as I can? Which is why Proverbs 15:16 says, better a little with a fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. It is better to have little and to fear the Lord than to gain all of the wealth in the world and your life be in turmoil. The New Testament would say, be careful not to gain the whole world and forfeit your soul. So go and earn with integrity. Because if we take the long view of history, we can look at it and say there's always sort of been two camps of people, the haves and the have-nots. And we might always be able to debate, okay, where is that line and who's on which side of it? But as we debate that, what I also know is whether you are considering yourself a have or a have-not, on each side of that spectrum, there are those that are earning things with integrity and wisdom and humility and righteousness and holiness and pursuing God. You can find those on both sides. And you can find people that are cutting corners and doing it with a lack of integrity and not following after God. Which is, again, why the Proverbs are saying, listen, it doesn't matter where you're at. What matters is, are you earning with integrity? Are you earning it with righteousness? Which means I need to examine my life and go, okay, God, the resources that I am accumulating, am I doing it with integrity? And I know the temptation here, because I've said it, is to look at it and go, well, no, but hey, somebody's gonna make the money, might as well be me. But fearing the Lord and pursuing pure wisdom when it comes to our finances is being willing to leave money on the table to keep our integrity before God and pursuing him. And so we have to earn with integrity. But then as you begin to earn it, right, and it's coming in and whatever that looks like for you, okay, now what do we do? Well, I think the next thing we need to do is we need to save with intentionality. We need to begin to look at our finances and save. Proverbs 13:11 says this, that dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. They're really kind of picking up, going, hey, dishonest money, you're gonna get it fast and you're gonna lose it fast because you don't know how to be wise with it and save it. But if you gain it with integrity, then you have the wisdom to save it and let it grow little by little by little. To take it and to save it and to invest it and to save intentionally and to plant a seed when it is small and then let it grow into this amazing, I don't know, money tree of sorts, right? And then you go, God, I'm gonna just trust you. I'm going to trust that in the long terms that if I would save now, I will be better off for it in the future, but it takes time. And I'm really good at spending money as fast as I get it, which means I have to be disciplined. If I'm going to save intentionally, I have to be disciplined, and I don't like discipline. I heard one pastor put it this way, that discipline is really just another way to say delayed gratification. Oh, and that's so hard when it comes to money, right? Because I look at people around me and I go, well, they've got a nicer house than I do, or a nicer car than I do. And or I look at them and go, well, they've got this toy or that toy, or they're able to pay for this education or that education, or they've just got the newest shoes or jacket or watch. And I go, I want what they have. And God's going, no, gain it slow. Be disciplined. Delay the gratification. Be willing to be disciplined when you're young so that you actually have something to retire on when you're older. In fact, one of my favorite proverbs around this is Proverbs 6:6 that says this, go to the ant, you sluggard. Now, first of all, that is a great like knockdown, okay? If you're looking for like the newest thing, don't call them lazy. Next time your kids aren't picking up their room, they'll be like, why are you so lazy? Be like, why are you a sluggard, right? They'd be like, oh no. Okay, go to the ant. Maybe that's not loving. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer, no ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. I love this. It's as if the Proverbs writer is stepping in and going, hey, human beings, you think you're so smart. You're conquering other nations and other peoples, and you're exploring space and the oceans, and you're figuring out all these scientific breakthroughs and mechanisms, and you are so amazing. Yet you're more foolish than the ant. With its tiny little brain, it at least knows that when there is a harvest to glean, you gain from it and save. Don't just spend it as you get it. Save it. So for some of you, you're going, okay, I need to start here. And so let me just, very simple principle would be the 10-10-80 rule. That if all of your income that comes in, save 10%, give away 10%, and live off 80%. And just start there. Even if you're young and you're 13, 14, 15, 16, you just got your first job. Begin there and go, okay, at my first job, I'm going to just set this up and I'm going to make it a habit of my life that I save intentionally. So I'm going to go 10, 10, 80, save 10, give 10, and live off 80. You know, my wife and I, when we were learning this principle of how to save intentionally, early on in our marriage, we realized that we're both pretty good at saving, but we're both really good at spending. And so we set a budget up for us and we were trying to follow it. But every now and then you're walking through a store, you see one of those like weird ads where you talk about something and then it's on your phone the next day and you're like, they're listening, right? It's that moment and you look at it and you can begin to justify why you need that thing. And I'm really good at it. I can convince myself that I need it. And so my wife and I, early on in our marriage, we set up a rule for that season that we were at. And we said, we want to save intentionally. And we want to, the next thing we're going to talk about is spending with caution. We want to do these two things. And so he said, so here's what we're going to do. If it's over $20, you have to call each other and ask permission to spend that much money. And so we just said, that was our money. We said 20 bucks. Because what we found is when I wanted to spend spur of the moment, she didn't. And vice versa, right? And so what would happen is inevitably I would call her. I'm like, hey, I see this thing. And I'd start justifying why I needed it. And she'd hear me out. And most of the time she'd be like, No, you don't need that. And the other, now every now and then it was like, yeah, that makes sense. And then the other part of it was we just said, hey, if you call the other person and they don't answer the phone, that's God's way of saying you don't need this right now, okay? And it was just our way of we're going, okay, if we're going to save intentionally, then we need to spend with caution. And so, okay, we've got to step back and we set that rule up. But it meant we had to delay gratification. And I know how hard that is for us. Back when my wife and I were doing college ministry, one of the offshoots and kind of byproducts of being a college pastor is you end up doing a whole lot of weddings, which means you're also doing a lot of premarital counseling with people. And so we would sit down and I always tell them this story just from my own life. And it applies to marriage, but it also applies to our finances. As I would look at them and say, hey, listen, here's my story. My parents had been married about 8 years when I was born. So about 8 years into their marriage, I came into the planet. So then, theoretically, if I'm about 12 when I'm paying attention to what it looks like to be married, that means my parents have had 2 decades of practice, 2 decades of working on it. So then for me, I was married in my early 20s, and so that means by the time I got married in my early 20s and I'm really trying to figure out, okay, what does this look like, my parents have had 3 decades at minimum to figure out what marriage looks like. And yet so often we would see couples that were looking at healthy marriages ahead of them and they were going, well, I want that for my marriage now. And it's like, yeah, they've had 30 years to get there. You're in year one. They would also go, yeah, but look at that house that they have or this. And this, all the couples around me, this is what they have. And we were like, no. Remember, they've had 30 years of making wise decisions as a couple to get to where they're at. Slow down. Save with intentionality. Spend with caution. And let it grow over time. Here's what Proverbs has to say about spending with caution. It says, the plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty. The plans of the diligent lead to a profit. Hey, you want to gain more? You need to plan to gain more. It doesn't just happen. As surely as haste, just spending it as quick as you get it, that's how you get into poverty. You see, I know my own life, and I'm going to venture for most of us in this room, we don't have a spending problem. We're really good at spending. We have a planning problem. We're not great at planning our finances out, of looking at our income and saying, okay, how do I plan appropriately so that I can save some money and spend appropriately? Which means for many of us in the room, we actually need to set up a budget. Every time when we do Rooted during week 8, there's a week that we just look at this idea of finances. And it always amazes me as people come through that week and as I talk to them and talk to their leaders, how many of us have yet to set up a budget? It is such a simple thing that we can do to begin to use wisdom and get a grasp on where's our money going. It's to set up a budget and say, okay, here's what we can and cannot spend. And here's the 10-10-80, and okay, now we have to keep to our budget. One of my favorite examples of somebody that's done this in a way that I think is just amazing and it needs to be applauded and talked more about is a couple in our church. In fact, the wife works on our staff in our finance department. It's Marissa and Jacob Lida. And I know what you want to know about Marissa and Jacob is that when they got married, they put their finances together and they realized they had $87,000 in debt and most of that was student loans. And they looked at that and they went, whoa, wait a minute. We are gonna forever be a slave to this debt if we don't do something about it. And so they began to say, okay, how do we earn with integrity? How do we save with intentionality? How do we spend with caution? And in 2.5 years, they paid off over $87,000 in debt. That's amazing to me. But it took discipline and it took hard work and it took saying we are gonna sacrifice some things in order to do it. And now Marissa, she experienced it so much and loves it so much. She's actually got a YouTube channel and a blog post and she loves to help other people grow and get out from under debt. Oh, and by the way, she's 23. Okay, here you can go to YouTube and look up The Budgeting Wife. Or you can go to thebudgetingwife.com and read her blogs and see her videos. And she loves to just teach people in those ways about how she has done it. And I love to highlight them, not because they're doing it perfectly or the only way, but because they're a couple that has gone, God, we fear you and we want to use your wisdom and apply it to our lives, and they're doing it. And so those are the type of people that I go, yeah, how can I highlight that? Not only that, but the two of them, starting September 16th at 2:30 on Sundays, are going to be leading our Financial Peace University class. And so if you're going, I need help in learning how to handle my finances, I would encourage you to sign up for Financial Peace University. And Marissa and Jacob are going to be there to teach it. So you can go to willamette.cc/peace and sign up for that and begin to figure out how to apply some of these principles to your life in different ways. And so if we're going to earn with integrity and save with intentionality and spend with caution, there's one more thing that the Proverbs speak to, and that is that we need to give generously. We need to be a people that are known for our generosity. In fact, I believe in this one so much, and we do as a church, that this has become one of the core values of who we are. That anybody that calls this place home and anybody that is on our staff, we would be known as people that are sacrificially generous. Being willing to give up some of the things that I want and desire in order to sacrifice for other people so that they can have things. Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruit of all of your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. I love verse 9 there that says, honor the Lord with all of your wealth, with the first fruit of your crops. He's going, all of your wealth, no matter how much or how little you have, all of your wealth, honor God with it. Remember, we can't serve two masters. And the first fruits, that which we are giving to first, reveals the heart and what we really value. And so I have to ask myself, God, am I giving to you first, or am I giving to my own debt, or am I giving to the government? God, I always want to give my first fruits to you and honor you with everything that I have first. I want to give generously to your kingdom work. And now verse 10, we have to be careful with this, right? It says that if you do this, your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. I want to be so cautious. We do not believe, nor will we ever teach the health and wealth gospel here. In fact, I don't even like to use the word gospel with that. The gospel is the good news of Jesus come to save all of us so that we could have life with him. The health and wealth gospel, the false gospel that it is, says, hey, listen, if you're extremely generous, then God is obligated to bless you with more riches. Remember, this is a proverb, not a promise. Not only that, we don't even have time to get in what new wine means throughout all of Scripture. But what this is saying is, listen, when you are a generous person, it's amazing how much your life is refreshed and blessed in ways that you never could have imagined. And if you are being generous in your giving and God gives you more resources and more finances and more money, the reason that God is giving that to you is not to raise your standard of living, but to raise your standard of giving. Because he's going, you are someone that has a heart that is after me. You're not giving in order to twist my arm so that I'll give you more. That's double-minded. That does not honor God. But he's going, when you are giving with a heart that is for me and for my work, yes, I want to pour that onto you because you're going to be someone that gives it back to the kingdom. Proverbs 11:25 says, a generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. I think we could all use some refreshment. We could all live lives that were more refreshing to us than they're not. Because I know that I can always get more and get more and get more. But I could always give more and give more and give more. And I want to be known as someone that has sacrificial generosity, that is generous in my giving with no strings attached. In fact, if I was to ask this question, and I'm going to ask it, but it's rhetorical, don't raise your hands. But if I was to say, okay, by show of hands, how many in this room have had buyer's remorse? Right? I think most of us in the room would go, yeah, I've had buyer's remorse at some point. I was 13, I was 22, I was 72, and I had buyer's remorse. If I was to say, okay, now keep your hands up if you've ever had giver's remorse, I think most of the hands would go down. There's probably a few that would stay up, no doubt. I think every now and then we're generous and we regret being generous with that person for some reason or another, and which is why we need to be wise in our generosity, absolutely. And just as a quick aside, if you're looking for a book on this, there's a wonderful book called When Helping Hurts. It's a fantastic read on how to be wise with our generosity and make sure that we're actually helping people and not hurting them. And so I think if I was to ask, okay, who has had buyer's remorse? Most of us would raise our hands. Who's had giver's remorse? Most of them would go down. Which tells me that that's what it means to be refreshed by our generosity. That when I give things away, when I live in a sacrificial way, especially for God's kingdom and other people, it's refreshing to me. I don't ever regret doing that. And so we need to be people that give generously. I want to end in very much the same idea and vein of where we started. Proverbs 8:10 says this, so choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her. I need pure wisdom. I need to fear the Lord and get wisdom from him. And may I desire that more than all of the other resources that I have, the gold, the diamonds, the retirement, the 401k, the investments. May I always say, God, I want your wisdom more than my wisdom, more than all the wealth that I can acquire. So God, make me neither rich nor poor, but may you give me my daily bread so that I may serve you. I truly believe that if every single one of us, whether you fear God or not, would apply these principles into our lives, we would have richer, more robust, more joy-filled lives, because the most amazingly joy-filled people I know are the people that love God and are the most generous friends that I have. Let's pray together. God, I thank you this morning. I thank you for your proverbs that you've just laid out your wisdom for us. God, help me to apply that wisdom to my life. Help each of us here to realize where we know these things to be true, but we're not putting them into action. So God, may we each grow and what it looks like to allow you to speak in to our finances. It's in the name of Jesus that I pray these things. Amen.